This week's guest is Kevin Lustig, and the show is sponsored by CyberPointers and Sassy Jack's Stitchery. CyberPointers is the online chapter of the American Needlepoint Guild. Meetings are held every other month, January, March, May, July, September, and November, and last for 5 days. The meetings are completely online, with the program and chapter business conducted through online access and email. Programs are led by an instructor who is available to respond to comments and questions via email during the meeting. In addition, CyberPointers provides stitching opportunities through workshops featuring projects by national designers that may not otherwise be available to members. They also offer periodic Zoom lectures. To see upcoming programs, workshops, and lectures, visit the education page on the CyberPointers website at cyberpointers.org. And membership is open to all ANG members. Spring is on its way, and that means the Nashville market is on the horizon. The folks at Sassy Jack Stitchery will be attending the show and hauling back a trailer full of the latest charts. Monitor the many designers who are participating in the show, make a list of the charts, and place your order with Kim so she can ship them to you as soon as the show is over. Be sure to place your orders as soon as you can so Kim can place her orders with the various designers. Sassy Jacks will have a shop at the Fiber Talk Needle Arts Weekend, March 21 to 23. If you're attending, and we hope you will, Kim will be happy to bring your Nashville order with her to save you shipping costs. Either way, place your order as soon as you can so you don't miss out on the latest designs. If you're someone who can never have enough scissors, check out the Golden Forge Scissors, a new offering from Sassy Jacks. They are available in red and willow green, drop forged from a single piece of steel, hand-finished by Italian artisans, and are fantastic. Treat yourself to a pair today. Make it a habit to visit the Sassy Jacks website at sassyjackstitchery.com and join the Sassy Jacks Facebook group to keep up with all of the upcoming activities. Thanks to Sassy Jacks and CyberPointers for sponsoring this week's show. Please support our sponsors. They are what makes possible shows such as our conversation with Kevin Lustig. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from New York City, right in the city, Kevin Lustig. Kevin, welcome.
Thank you, Gary. It's nice to be here.
Good to have you. All right, so this all happened because I saw a post somewhere, probably Facebook, about an exhibit you currently have in the Garment District in New York. And then looked at your art and then followed you on Instagram. And it wasn't probably 2 hours later, you followed back and then said, hey, if you're interested, I'd be willing to talk. And the reason I followed you was because I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to see if we could do a show because I wanted to talk about your art. So it was one of those bang, bang, bang. And here we are. So the garment, what is that like? That's got to be really thrilling to have an exhibit of your work in a storefront in the Garment District of New York. I mean, holy smokes, how many people go by that a day?
A lot, because it's a very, well, first, our Manhattan has these different districts, the Garment District, the Financial District, and there are organizations that help keep that neighborhood clean and keep the businesses flourishing. And the Garment District Alliance is one of the best. And they're on West 38th Street, and they've got this large storefront window. And they're very generous. A man named Jerry Scupp finds artists to put their shows, put their work in this window. And as I said, it's on West 38th Street, and a lot of people pass by there, and a lot of people in the fiber arts, and mm-hmm. we're talking fiber arts. So when they see yarn and thread and beads and things like that, it gets their attention. And in fact, just the other day I was walking by and I saw a woman looking at my artwork, and it's so flattering to have somebody, to see someone looking at your art.
Oh, I can imagine that. Yeah. Did you interact with her? Do you try to do that or let them be?
No, I didn't. I do. I thought it would sound kind of phony, like that's my artwork you're looking at. Like I was boasting. Would she believe me? So I just observed her observing. I took a picture of her. In fact, it meant so much to me. But it gets a lot of attention. I got a lot of new followers on Instagram and Facebook, and I have gotten some media attention. A couple of the New York publications have done a little squib or a little article on it, and it tickles me. It makes me feel really good.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, you pour all that effort into your art, and it's good to see people actively appreciating it. That's got to be that makes it worth it right there. Yeah. Is that
absolutely
when, now this is not your first exhibit, but when somebody says, hey, we'd like to put your stuff up, do you generally just have stuff already, pieces already that you can select from? Or do you immediately, like in this case, did you go and say, I got to create something fresh?
I have a big stock of pieces that I can choose from. And some are hanging around here. Some are in the bedroom closet. And if somebody gives me an exhibit, I try to find, between 10 and 20, however big the exhibit space is, of interesting works. And then I'll put those up. I rarely, because needlework is a slow process. It's rare that I could say, oh, I'm going to make a piece just for this, because a piece could take a month, as you probably know.
Yeah.
It's,
I pick
from what I've got. I put it.
Okay. Yeah. So then, and needlepoint, your primary technique, but from your perspective, you're constantly developing new pieces then, just because.
I'm always, when I finish one project, I start the next right away. Either I might take 1 or 2 days off, but nothing more than that. Mm. Yeah. I'm always working.
Constant. Yeah. Here we are, two males in a female world. So that's, that's its own whole show right there. Talking about that. How did needlework come to you as a child?
Well, sort of. When I was young, I was just handy with a needle and thread. I remember when I was young, I could sew on a button, or if a shirt tore, I could mend it very easily. I was just good at it. And then when I was in my, after college, I'd been using my brain. I thought I want to do something with my hands. So I started making quilts, and I got a book on quilt making and just figured it out. And then when I was over, I was about 30, 31, 32, something like that, I saw a needlepoint kit. And I thought that could be, I hadn't done it before. I thought that could be interesting. And I'm not kidding. It was a bouquet of flowers. And I did no more than 3 or 4 stitches for a petal of a flower. Mm. And I was hooked. I thought, this is for me. And so I did quite a few kits, needlepoint kits and cross stitch kits, to learn the different kinds of stitches. And then I wanted to branch out and create my own designs, and all this craziness ensued. Now I can't stop.
Yeah. How does that compare? I mean, quilting is your sewing machine and cutting out fabric and all those things. And then needlework is, old school needle and thread, and you know, your hands got to do the work. How does that compare mentally? And what is it that appeals to you when it comes to just needle and thread?
Well, my quilts, I actually, if you can believe this, I did them by hand. Like a quilting bee. I had it in my living room. This is when I was living in Chicago, but in my living room in Chicago, and I have it over my lap. Not a bunch of people around, so it wasn't a bee, but it was just me doing it by hand.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just something about the motion, the pull the thread up through the needle, up through the fabric and out, and then back down and out. That rhythm, it is so relaxing to me. Mm-hmm. If you've had a hard day at work, if you're feeling stressed, you can just unwind with this rhythm.
Yeah.
I just love it.
Okay. So that hooks all of us. Yeah. It's that rhythm. Yeah. It gets us all.
You feel the same way?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, just about everybody we've ever talked to has that same experience, because it's like it releases your mind, and you just, you can work out problems, or you can just sit there and be idle. Yeah. It's either way.
Well, each and two, I found each piece has its own set of problems. You decide what stitch should I do here? I've run out of the color yarn. How am I going to solve this problem? So it takes, you're worried about these sets of problems rather than something else in the world. So it clears your mind of all that other stuff, politics and war, and you can just focus on this canvas.
Know the feeling. Know the feeling. Yeah. Takes a little bit. Sometimes takes 15 minutes and then you're off. You're just in another world. Yeah. It's great.
Absolutely.
Now, so kits, did you do a bunch of kits over some time and then transition into doing your own designs or,
Exactly. I did probably about at least 50 kits, I would say. And then I got bored, to be honest, because it was color by numbers. For me, it was just color by numbers. You put the blue yarn here, the green yarn there. But if someone's starting out, I absolutely recommend doing the kits because that's how you learn the stitching, different stitches, and you master them, and then you can work them into your own pieces.
Well, and that's kind of the great divide. And it doesn't matter what technique it is, where people doing other people's designs, doing kits, and sometimes for a lot of people that's enough.
Yes.
They're just happy executing that. And then there's a portion like you who say, "All right, that gives me a foundation. Now I've got my own ideas, and I want to go do those." So you get a different camp of people. And so as you're doing these kits, are ideas forming in your head? Are you saying, wait a minute, I could do this or I could modify this kit?
Well, I don't do any kits anymore. I haven't done a kit in at least 20 years. At least that long. But I have to tell you, I'm on Facebook, I'm on two needlepoint pages, Needlepoint Nation and Needle Pointers. And they're doing very beautiful traditional kits and hand painted canvases, and then they choose the yarn and they're exquisite. And then I post my stuff. And some people get me, I know, and my wild ideas, but other people don't. Actually, what is that? I think a couple of them they had to take down. I guess I got too good of it.
Well, that's the thing about your art is, and I'm sure I had the same reaction most people do. The first time I see it, it really strikes you as almost whimsical in many ways. And then there's that moment, and I had it happen with several of your pieces. There's that moment, and then it clicks in. And there's that deeper meaning to just about all of them, and then mentally you just stop and go, whoa, this is saying something meaningful, and this is saying thought-provoking things. So it's you really seem to have a knack for that ability to, on the surface looks, yeah, it's interesting. Okay, good job, and then, wow, underneath it is. When you first started designing, is that the way you've always done it, or did that evolve?
No, that absolutely evolved. I guess my mind works in kind of an unusual way. Well, since I was young, if everybody's doing something one way, I tended to do it a different way. I just went in a different direction. I don't know why. That's just the way my brain is wired. And so, for what you were talking about, one example comes to mind. I did a beautiful bird sitting on a branch of a tree, and you can see it's pooping. You can see the poop coming out from the bird. So I thought that was good. Just beautiful bird, and then poop. Or another one I did was well, this one I think it would hit you right away. It's a school zone sign with bullet holes in it, and so I cut out parts of the fabric and then frayed the yarn around the bullet hole, and then I put red construction paper behind it to suggest blood. And that's one of the pieces that got taken down, understandably, on one of those social media pages, because that it was pretty violent. But I guess I like this exhibit is called Needling, and I guess I like needling people.
Well, to me, that is certainly top two or three of your most powerful pieces. I can see why it would get taken down, unfortunately, because you know it makes a statement that people need to think about. And that one really has stuck in my mind when just cruising through and then preparing for this. You know, that one, and as a matter of fact, my wife, before we started recording, was asking who I was talking to. And so I was telling her about you. And I said, that was the example I gave, was the school zone sign. And I said that you make such a powerful statement in such a simple way with needlework. And it's that one. That one grabs you. It's and you know, and it's tragic that those kinds of things even come to mind. But I guess that's the world we live in. Yeah,
I've been choosing things that have been in the news. For example, one I just finished. I'm not sure if I sent you a picture of it. I might have. California fires have been rampant. Yeah,
you
lately.
Did.
In fact, we just had some in New Jersey. So the state of California, and you know, when you, on the news, when there are fires, they have little pictures of flames.
Right.
And then I singed part of the mat, burned part of the mat with matches. So that has kind of a dramatic effect too.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that. Okay. So you do needlework. And then you're messing around with fire.
I know. But I like playing with the material. I had another one of I wanted to, you know, needlepoint is always neat and tidy and clean and perfectly framed. I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if I ripped some fabric? Mm-hmm. And I thought, what could I do? And so I did a heart. And this was really hard. I sewed the red heart perfectly. And I took some scissors to get the tear started, and then I just yanked it. And that was hard to do when you work so hard on something. And then again, I frayed the yarn. And again, it has a dramatic effect. And there was another one where, let me think. Oh, I had the picture of a brain and yarn unspooling from the brain.
Yes.
And I call that, you know, when the mind unravels. Yeah. So I like playing with fabric and yarn and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, go back to that California fire thing. All right, we're messing with fire and inflammable materials. How do you, I mean, that's a risk. There's like when you struck that match, there had to be a moment where do I really want to do this? How do you, cause you got that smoke look that I'm sure you were after. How'd you keep that thing from going right up in flames?
Well, first of all, I did it in the kitchen by the sink, just in case.
Good move. Good move.
Yeah. And it wasn't a big flame. It was literally just matches. And I had to strike about 20 different matches to get the effect. It's actually on the wall over there. And if it started to burn too much, I'd pull the yarn away and then tap out the burning part so it would stop. But it turned out fine and perfectly safe. No fires here.
Yeah.
Thank heavens.
Yeah. Now, I love that part of your mind that is so willing to ask the what if question. You know, what if I do this? What if I do that? Mm-hmm. And is that just natural to you, or just something you do because it's art?
Both, I would say. And like I said, if everybody's doing something one way, I want to find a different way of doing it, a more creative way of doing it. I've always had a creative brain. Like when I was a kid, I would make up games. I would make scrapbooks of things. I was always creating stuff. Mm-hmm. So I just have a creative brain, and this is one of the outlets for it. And I just thought of another one where I'm doing something a little non-traditional. This will be my next piece. Again, when you frame something, it's always straight. It's straight. Right. Is it lined up right?
Of course.
So, wouldn't it be interesting if I tilt the piece? And so what's tilted? What's askew right now? And I don't want to get into politics, but right now the Supreme Court has six conservative judges and three liberal.
Yeah.
I thought, well, that's not quite balanced right now. So I'm going to sew an image of the Supreme Court justices and then tilt it to the right. That might be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those ideas going through your head all the time.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. But it's like a faucet. I'm lucky I can turn it off. Like when I need an idea, I call it. I have to turn on the faucet, and then the idea seemed to flow. But I could imagine, though, if you can't turn it off, that would be terrible. But luckily, I can. And strangely, ideas come to me in that twilight time between sleeping and waking up in the morning, like 5:30 a.m., 6 a.m. I'm just getting up, and I'm half asleep, I'm half awake, and ideas just spin in my head, and they come out then, particularly.
Yeah. Do you write them down or do you remember them?
No, they stay until they're either executed, finished, or I reject them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in the mind, there's this ongoing debate about whether an idea is valid or not.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I'd say for every 10 ideas I have, maybe two or three come to fruition. Mm-hmm. A lot of ideas get rejected.
Yeah. Do old ones sometimes come back in a different form?
Sometimes, yes.
Okay. All right.
I can't think of an example right now, but yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. So it's very fluid all the time. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. When you design, do you just sit down with a piece of canvas and start stitching, or is there an illustration, or?
Well, I'm not good at freehand drawing, but I will do a rough sketch first, and very rough. And sometimes something a little more complex, I'll just trace. You know, I'll bring it up on my computer and put the canvas over it and then trace
it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. If it's something simple, like the Supreme Court justice, just their outline, that I'll be able to manage. The state of California, I was able to draw that out. That's simple. But something more complex, I'll just trace it and then choose my color palette of yarns. It's mostly blues, mostly reds, what color here, what color there. And then I just start sewing.
Yeah. And I love that you, in instances, people do your kind of work. Most of the time, this is a generalization I shouldn't make, but I'm sure a majority of the time we would find that it would be a basket weave, tent stitch thing, just to get it in and deal with the details. But you go beyond. You mix in other stitches and enhance the depth, and there's more to it. That's what really I liked about it, is there'll be some basket weave, but then there'll be other stitches that either background or foreground or add depth. And I admire the thought there. Yeah.
Thank you. For a while I got stuck in the basket weave stitch, that simple tent stitch, just up and out, up and out.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to fall back on that. And for certain parts I need to do that. But I do try to vary it with different stitching. Yeah. Thank you for noticing that.
Yeah. Well, and it makes a difference. Because then a lot of times in your pieces, the basket weave, if it's the main subject, it stands out more because you framed it with a different stitch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you see those stitches as you're going, or is there a lot of ripping out and trying other things?
As you know, there's a lot of ripping
okay.
out. And that is one of my least favorite things to do, but I've got this great pair of scissors with, they're shaped like a pelican, and the beak is very pointed scissors, and it's great for getting out, you know, stitching you don't want. It's really just trial and error. And I admire painters, because if you don't like the way they look, you just put paint over it. It's very easy.
Right.
But we have to take out the stitching with the scissors. Then sometimes you even have to get a needle in there, or sometimes tweezers to get out the stitching, especially if it's a tight stitch. But changing your mind is difficult, but sometimes it's trial and error.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the hurdles that needleworkers get over, or have to get over, is, you know, I stitched that so well and now I got to rip it out. Oh man, it hurts. It hurts.
Yeah. It does. I agree.
Yeah. And if you're doing it with silk, it's, this is expensive too. Yeah. But you gotta, yeah. You use the term yarn. But what you use a variety of threads?
I do use yarn sometimes, and I have the floss. I'll use floss sometimes. I use what I've got, and sometimes I'll use thread. I'll just if it's a precise color and I can't find the right kind of yarn for it, you know, the cross stitching thread is, they have so many different colors. Right. I'll just use all 8 strands of it to fill it in.
Okay.
But sometimes I do use yarn.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know with the brain one, that's yarn. Well, there's several pieces where yarn is involved. Good old fashioned yes. knitting yarn. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It works.
Just a mixture. Is there any art background with you, or is it?
No, I'm all self-taught. I probably could have benefited from an art class, but also maybe that could have been confining. So I'm just sort of making this up as I go along. So my stuff does look different than everybody else's. But no, it's all self-taught.
Yeah. That's the thing with the art training is sometimes that starts to restrict the mind. And I wonder how many artists go through school just absolutely tortured because they see a different way, but the instructor won't let them. And
I think what happens when you first start, you imitate the artists you like. For example, I like Mondrian and Frank Lloyd Wright, their designs. And so when I first started doing my own designs, I made like a Mondrian type tile. Or something like Frank Lloyd Wright, very geometric triangles and rectangles. And then you have to reject that. Say, okay, I've done that. Now I've got to come up with my own vision, my own ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, yeah. Is that, and that's, you know, you're hitting all the hot buttons because that's one thing where people struggle with, I guess. And some people never cross that line into using their own ideas. They just don't believe that they can work. And you've obviously crossed that line that you operate on the other side completely in terms of your own ideas. But even in there, I got to believe there's times when you stitch something and go, it just doesn't work. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. I almost always bring a piece to fruition. If I've started it, because I'm a completist, I have to complete it. But occasionally, I'll give you an example. Here's one. I had the idea of, again, blur. I wanted to fuzz yarn, just have a piece that's all fuzzy. I thought, what's blurred? Sometimes the line between right and wrong is blurry. So I just sewed the word right, the word wrong, with a line in between. And I sewed mm-hmm. very loosely, needle pointed very loosely. And I used tweezers to make it fuzzy, and it just didn't work. And I just didn't frame it. So yeah, sometimes you just have to give up. But for it, you know, this isn't for everybody. This making your own design. Some people are perfectly happy working on kits. It passes the evening while they're watching TV or listening to an audio book, and that's perfectly fine. But this is—it's almost like what I have to do. It's like a calling.
Yeah,
I can't stop.
Well, that's the beauty of needle art. In general, is that there are so many paths people can take and find the one that suits them. Yeah, there's a truckload of people who are more than happy to execute another person's design. They enjoy the stitching, and they chose the design because they liked it, and that's good for them. And there's other people who, I don't want anything to do with that. I want to create my own stuff. Other people who modify designs say, I see that, but I want different colors. That's the fun part, is because there's always a path for somebody to try. And of course there's 50 billion techniques that people can use. So, I enjoy that you don't feel like there's so many, other needle. This isn't coming out right at all. The materials you use, I'll try again. The materials you use, you're not tied to just thread. You will work in really whatever makes the statement for you. And
yes. Here's another example. I did.
Boy, I fumbled through that all just to ask a simple question, didn't I? That was just really fantastic.
That's all right. One of the, now it's fairly common in the art world to use found object, incorporating found objects into art. Like people will paint on a newspaper. Or an old telephone directory page, something like that. And so I will occasionally incorporate other objects. I did a fish, a mother fish with its baby fish around it, and I sewed a straw, a plastic straw, and the mother fish is about to swallow, ingest the plastic straw. So again, whatever, if it's an unusual object that I can sew onto canvas, and if it fits the piece, I'll do it.
Yeah. No, that's the one that sticks in my mind as someone who used to keep aquariums in large number. And so I'm very sensitive to all the trash that goes in the ocean and what it does to the life there. And that's one of those where initial viewing, whimsical, oh, that's cute. There's a fish and there's a straw. And then, oops, wait a minute. This is...
The mother is about to swallow it. And I'm sure you've seen the pictures of the footage of like a turtle with a... the six pack, a plastic thing trapped around their neck, and they can't get. And you've got these ecologists trying to cut off the plastic piece. It's so sad. So I wanted to say something about that.
Yeah. No, I watch a YouTube channel just about every day, Ocean Conservation Namibia, and it's guys in Namibia, but in the coast there, who go out every day and cut trash off of Cape fur seals. And I mean, every day they put one up where they capture these seals, and they're very good at it and very careful. But gill nets, O-rings from ship engines, rope, fishing line—it's always fishing line. All the trash that's in the ocean that gets around these seals' necks and chokes them as they grow. They just slowly get choked, and these guys go out and cut the stuff off and. And that fish piece spoke to me because I follow these guys, and it's the same thing. We think we're just throwing it away in the water, and it just goes away. But there's a whole ecosystem that gets affected by all that trash. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm from the generation when in the early 1970s, I think it was a part of a Lady Bird Johnson's highway beautification program. They showed there was a big anti-littering campaign, and they showed people just tossing trash out on the highway. And then you see an Indian crying, seeing this trash in his land. And that's always stuck with me. And I am fanatical about not littering. I will, if I on the street and I toss some paper into a garbage can, if I miss it, I'll pick it up and put it in. So I feel the same way about the environment.
Yeah. Younger people don't remember those days because the roadways were nothing but garbage dumps. I mean, it was just trash everywhere. And on a windy day, it's blowing all over the place. And then we decided to clean it up. I remember at that time, I made a trip to Canada. I think it was a family trip of some kind to Canada. Pristine.
Yeah. Just I'll bet.
Pristine. And you go, what are we doing in this country? That you just flip it out the window because it was normal. Just driving along the road, I'm just throw it out the window. It'll, it's not our problem anymore. And then we cleaned up our mess. Yeah.
That was all Lady Bird Johnson who started that.
Yeah. But and that commercial, that is one of the all-time classic commercials because it says so much on so many levels. Yeah.
I agree.
I'm fascinated by your Andy Warhol phase, the cornflakes and
it's Andy Warhol with my own spin, with a needlepoint spin. He said corporate logo. I love iconography, corporate logos, things like that. And he said this can be art, a Campbell soup label, a Brillo box. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to borrow that idea. And so I found logos, things like a Krispy Kreme box, which has some great colors on it. It's mostly white, but it's got a beautiful green, I think red dots, if I remember correctly. And I tore it in half and I sewed half the Krispy Kreme box and then matched it up with the actual box.
Yeah.
And I did that with the Burger King. And then there was one though where I sewed part and had the actual box, but I split it. I separated it. So I was just playing around.
Yeah.
But thank you for admiring that. Thank you for admiring that.
Well, it caught my eye. I went to MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and in the Warhol section with the soup cans. And first I'd seen it. And my initial reaction was, how is this hanging in a place of this stature? what is going on here? But then as I'm standing there and I can't walk away from it.
I know.
And
I, I, Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, but it just that was a moment out of that whole museum. Spent almost a whole day there. That's the one that sticks in my mind and powerful. It's amazing.
I feel the same way about Warhol and Jackson. When you first see them, you think, what's this got to do with art? Why is this art at all? And Pollock just splattering paint.
Yeah.
They were the first ones to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the art world, to come up with a new idea is really difficult. So if you're the first, that counts for a lot. And if you like Warhol, as I do, if you're ever in Pittsburgh, that's where he's from. There's a whole Warhol museum. It's an old warehouse, and it, I think it's about 4 or 5 stories, and it's all Warhol, and it's really mighty. Wow. To see all of those pieces there. And you know, needlepoint is usually small, but these pieces are big. They take up a whole wall. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. When you have those phases, Warhol, whatever, do you do a bunch of them and then I'm done with that? Or
yes.
Okay.
Exactly. I'll do 2 or 3, and then I get restless, I get bored, then it's on to something else. So I'm always trying to come up with new ideas, and tearing or having something sticking out, or a found object, just always trying to do something different, tilting a piece, whatever's different.
Okay, so we may never see another one where you burn your...
I did another one. I did an emergency exit sign.
Yeah.
You know, like you see in an office building. I thought, I'll burn it. It'll be funny. So I have one of those that I burn it. So occasionally I'll go back to an idea I've used before with some fresh spin on it.
Yeah, okay. All right. So they don't go away forever. They sometimes come back. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Now you've done several exhibits. You've done a number of them. Do you seek those out, or do they just happen to you? Do you have somebody who points you toward them?
If you're an artist, you've got to self-promote. There's just no other way. People aren't going to come up to you. I mean, possibly they might, but most times you have to go out and get it. And so I wrote to the Garment District Alliance. I wrote to the libraries. We have a lot of branches of the New York Public Library here, and about 7 or 8 of them in Manhattan let me exhibit my pieces, and they've been very good to me. Now they had to put a moratorium on it. They had to stop, unfortunately, probably for some legal reasons, but I hope they bring it back. And where else? A place, this organization called Chishama, which is it's an art organization where they found unused little spaces around Manhattan that they fill with art, like a small window or a small area with, you know, behind glass, and then you can put your pieces there. So I exhibited there, the Leslie Lohman Project Space. I exhibited at Port Authority. But you have to go out and get it. You know, it's rare that someone comes to you. Very rare.
So, okay. So, because it interests me. So you actually go to them and say, hey, I do this work. You have some exhibit space. May I get on your schedule?
Yes, exactly. Just like that. Okay. I'll send a few examples of my work. I'll email them. Sometimes it's yes, sometimes it's no.
Yeah. The old salesperson thing. You got to be willing to hear no. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's simple.
Yeah.
Because if you're not self-promoting, who is? You know, who's going to do this for you? It's really up to you to do it.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're fortunate. You're in a city where there are ample opportunities.
Yes. You know,
a lot of people live in a town where there might be one art center, and that's it.
Yeah.
And you have plenty.
Yeah, I'm lucky in that way. I'm right in Manhattan, and I can. There are. It's just an artistic place, so I'm lucky that way.
Yeah, yeah. I've been to that garment district and walked in and out of several of those stores. That is a fascinating world. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And I'm sure the fire department makes them nervous too.
The fire department?
Yeah, all the cloth. Yeah.
Oh, we go the clothes. Yeah. Oh, clothes. I see. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can imagine. You guys better be buttoned up. Yep. The I mentioned earlier about being males in a female world. I learned from a college girlfriend That's where I learned needlework, and it stayed with me ever since. She is not my wife, and you know that relationship ended, but that stuck with me. But as you know, male in a female world, I would stitch. I've been stitching since college, and I'm almost 70. And but I never, if it came up, I would talk about it. But it wasn't something where I would show up in public and stitch, because people look weird at me. Well, my dad just a few years ago, we were talking, and somehow this podcast came up. And I said, he said, well, what's it all about? And I told him, he says, you mean sewing? Like, what are you doing? And just never mind. Yeah. But it's, it's something I just never openly talked about, because people just look at me weird. But as I got older, I just got to the point where I don't care.
Yeah.
I just don't care.
They don't like it too bad.
Yeah. Right.
Well, we're in good company. Rosie Greer.
Yeah.
The athlete.
Yeah.
Henry Fonda needle pointed on set when he was trying to quit smoking. So there, we're out there, us guys. It just never bothered me. I just do my own thing. And if people are bothered that I do this, that's okay. They can be bothered. If people don't like the artwork I'm creating, I just don't look at it. I just do my own thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I admire that. I couldn't do that. And then I got to that point.
Did you start with needle? Because I remember when I was real young, a woman neighbor was showing me how to crochet. And I was able to do it, but I didn't love it enough to stick with it. Did your girlfriend show you needlepoint or cross stitch, or what did she show you?
Needlepoint painted canvas, 13 count needle needlepoint with wool yarn, back in those days when it was wool yarn and basket weave. And So I, painted canvas and did some kits, and then discovered, it was in the days where there were cross stitch stores everywhere, was when, that's when I discovered cross stitch. And I took a class at that store. It was such a weird thing. It was a cross stitch on linen. And which to me is not a big deal, but at the time it was, to stitch on linen instead of Aida so we had a class on stitching on linen. Of course, I'm the only male. There's six or seven people there. I'm the only male, I remember walking in the first time. It's like, what are you doing? You're in the wrong store. You belong in the hardware store, And
sewing on linen, that would be. Give me that. I like the block. Aida cloth. I need those squares visible. Just the way I am. My eyes aren't that good, it would be difficult to sew.
Yeah. That's what big fat magnifiers are for. Yeah.
lighted magnifiers.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. All of it. Pour it all on there. You bet. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Kevin, thank you, and love your art, man. It's just you make so many statements in so many ways. It's such a range, from fun to pointed to wake up. It's really, really admirable, and I'm glad you keep doing it. Or obviously, you have plans to never stop. So it's great.
No, as long as I can, I'll keep doing it.
Yeah,
yeah. Thank you, Gary, for having me on here. I've enjoyed chatting with you.
Really enjoyed it. Thank you, and thanks to everyone for listening.